show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into another glorious edition of the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr. With me, as always, the unfathomable Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
I'm all right. I'm distracted because they're doing some paving in my apartment complex.
Paving? Like parking lot paving?
Yeah, like they redid the parking lot. This parking lot was like, it's a really pretty nice complex way out in the west part of Lawrence, like way out west, almost into Lecompton, way out west. Straight out of Lecompton, yeah. But the the parking lot is just, it's always been terrible since I moved in here. And so, like, with the snow and everything and the ice and whatever, at various points, it was even worse. Like, they're just terrible potholes. It was awful. So they just tore it all up and repaved everything. But, like, the path towards my apartment's way in the back of the complex. And so as I was pulling in, coming home from work, they had it all blocked off. And so I went around the other way. There's kind of like there's an outer path over, you know, around all the buildings. And so I went on the other direction and they had that part blocked off too. So I just kind of parked at the curb. And so I don't know, they might pave me in or something by the time we're done.
Yeah. So. You might be stranded there forever.
Yeah. I'll just be stuck. So, oh, well, so it goes.
So it goes. So we are, as of right this instant, actually less than one full week away, because by the time we're recording this at 7:15 is the time, as I'm looking at my clock right now, on Monday evening, March 30th. So at this time next week, assuming we're recording at the same time, doubtful, because I know, Mike, you're going to the game.
Yep.
So I don't know what state you'll be in at 7 o'clock. To be passed out, who knows? But
I don't know.
At this time, regardless of whether or not we are actually recording, we will know if the Royals will start off 1-0 or not, because we all know how important that very, very first game is in baseball. So
yeah, if you lose that first game, you're done.
Season's pretty much over.
You're done. Fire
Yost. Might as well just pack it in.
Yep.
Fire Yost. Trade Hosmer. Trade everyone. It's over. It's over with. So we'll know whether or not we can have our reigning AL champs show if they win, or our sell the farm if they lose.
Our so rebuilding.
Something, yes, something to look forward to, ladies and gentlemen. But in the vein of being so close to this season, we've got some semi bold predictions
right
that we've prepared. It's hard to have too many bold predictions. I mean, beyond like they'll return to the World Series or something like that, and even that, since they went last year, isn't like that bold, despite what the Pacoda projections would have you believe. But I guess before we get to the bold predictions, we'll start with kind of just a final roundup, if you will, of spring training. And really, we've got like maybe one spot that the Royals are trying to hash out here.
Yeah.
And I mean, we mentioned it before, you know, already a couple times this offseason and this spring training, that it's mighty refreshing to have such an uneventful spring training and such a question with, or a spring training with so few questions still to be answered.
Yeah, there's not a lot of intrigue, and the Royals returned pretty much everybody from last year's AL Championship team, with the exception of, you know, I mean, three big names, but they found replacements to an extent, you know, no matter what you think of those replacements. They still filled those spots. You knew where those, who's going to be the DH. You knew who's going to be the right fielder, that last starter in the rotation. So there's not a lot of intrigue. It's all been about the bench. And, there was talk about would they do an 8-man bullpen. It seems like right now they're going to do a standard 4-man bench, standard for this era, at least, bench, and the regular, 7-man bullpen. So that's kind of the only intrigue going on is, Christian Colon wrapped up the utility battle, I guess. I mean, he was pretty much favored. He was pretty much going to have to collapse, and somebody was going to have to really outplay him to not win the job. And he's pretty much had it for like 2 weeks. Eric Kratz had a good camp, so there wasn't much between he and Francisco Pena for backup catcher. And Jarrod Dyson was a given to make the team. So, it was really a matter of would they carry an extra player or would they go with another arm in the bullpen? And it seems like now Paolo Orlando, who's had a really good spring, can play 3 outfield spots, has a little bit of pop, typical kind of like fast outfield guy. He looks like he's going to make the team, which he's been in the organization since like 2008. So
yeah, he's been around for a while.
He's been around forever, and he was only added to the 40-man last over the winter. So that's pretty cool for him. He's like one of, if he does make it, he'll be one of like 3 Brazilian players in the majors. So that's pretty cool. He was trying to be the first one, but Yan Gomes beat him to it.
Ah,
yep. Yeah, by like 2.5 years.
Damn you, Gomes.
Yeah. The only other real question is, who's going to finish out the bullpen? I mean, we know the rotation, we know the back end of the bullpen, and we know after they signed Chris Young and Jason Frazier, that, those two guys would be in there. So now it's kind of just a matter of, who's going to be that next guy. And, right now it's between Brian Flynn and Franklin Morales, 2 left-handers, and Lewis Coleman. And, assuming they still go with the typical bullpen, it's going to be 2 of those 3. I haven't really seen a whole lot really reported on this. I think it's just kind of understood that Franklin Morales is going to make the team and Lewis Coleman is going to make the team. Mostly because Brian Flynn has options, and at this time of the year, that's a big deal. That's one of those things that really determines who makes it, if there's even any level of equality in performance. And so between Coleman, who doesn't have options, and Morales, who can be effective, I think it makes Flynn kind of the odd man out. Not that he hasn't performed well. He's thrown really well this spring, and they really like him. But, Morales is probably he's probably the right pick there to just be the lefty, and then they see what they get out of him. And if he's effective, great. And if he's not, they can pull the plug early. And I guess the same would go with Coleman. They could always pull up Flynn and just have 2 lefties instead of the 1 if Coleman for some reason didn't make it, or if they wanted to try to get him through waivers once the season started, once rosters are kind of set up and teams aren't looking to make as many moves. That's kind of just that's kind of what the makeup of the roster is down to at this point, is just those last 2 spots, and really they're kind of assumptions and foregone conclusions now too. So we're just kind of trying to get through this last week without anybody getting hurt.
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean,
it's not very compelling, frankly.
No, it's not. And I mean, when you're the defending American League champions, and the biggest question coming out of spring training is who's going to be that 7th guy in your bullpen, and it's between, more or less 3 pitchers for those final 2 spots, then I think you're in pretty good shape. Now that depends on how much you believe from last year was legit and how much you believe was a fluke. Mm-hmm. If you believe last year was entirely a fluke, then the Royals are in a whole heap of trouble. But I probably fall somewhere near the middle. But regardless, it's really, really quite refreshing, as we've mentioned, to have just such a pretty standard. I mean, this must be what like the Yankees feel like every year, where it's like you kind of you pretty much know who's going to play what. And I mean, there's still there's still some questions, obviously, but I think. And let me, I mean, we can, I can kind of gauge your thoughts on this, Mike, but the comfort level with what we're going to get from the team is maybe the highest it's been in my lifetime. I'm not necessarily talking about like expectations so much as just, like I said, comfort level, meaning, so we, at this point, we pretty much know what we're going to get from Alex Gordon. He's probably going to hit, you know, in that 280, 285-ish range. Going to hit, you know, close to 20 home runs, get in that 60 to 80 RBIs. Going to gun down a lot of people from the outfield, play gold glove defense. Eric Hosmer will probably be, you know, close to that 280 range as well. You know, 15 homers-ish. You know, you can pretty much map it out what is – more or less expected of these players, as opposed to like last year and the year before, where it was like, man, you know, I really hope, you know, in 2013, it was, I really hope that was a fluke for Hosmer in 2012. And then last year it was, you know, wow, man, well, let's see if he can sustain it for 2 years in a row after having a really good 2013. And, you know, Gordon was, as of 2011, he was a very unproven commodity still. And so it was like, well, can he keep this going beyond, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years? I think at this point, you know, it's safe to say you can bank it what Gordon's going to give you. And, you know, before last year, Butler was pretty close to that way. And now that he's not here, that's a little bit of a question. But I think you can, you could probably safely say that, you know, Kendrys Morales will be able to give a good, pretty close to what you got from Butler the last 2 years. And so, I mean, it's really nice from you know, a fan standpoint, I think, to be able to look at it and say, okay, you can appreciably know what you're going to get most, more likely or more than likely from this team, which is, again, not to overuse the term, but refreshing, because my entire life, you know, it's always been, oh man. You know, is Alex Gordon going to break out? Is Billy Butler going to break out? Is Eric Hosmer going to do this? You know, is freaking Bob Hamlin going to, you know, was that rookie of the year just a fluke, or is he actually going to keep it going? Angel Barroa. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Nope. Is Angel Barroa going to make it happen? Is he the next legit, you know, Latino superstar, or is no, he's not, you know, so it's,
I remember those days.
Oh yes.
So yeah, fondly.
You know, that it was what it was. But now they're at a point where, you know, even Sal Perez, like, I mean, for the early parts, you know, the first, we'll call it three quarters of the season, I think you know what you're going to get from him. And, you know, it's just a matter of when you reach that final quarter of the season, is he going to be used so much that he's going to start to break down like he did last year? Or are the Royals going to be, sorry, there's...
What's happening over there?
I don't know. This is going like, holy crap. It's really close. I don't know what that was.
Sal is on the move.
Yes. They heard me. The Royals heard me talking about it being refreshing, and they came to come get me.
They're like, hold on. Talk like that. You can't have that.
Hold on now. But yeah, you know, that. So a lot of that, that'll kind of depend. But, and I, to phrase it a little differently, I think we know, because there's the comfort, yeah, and there's that comfort level with the expectation, but also, I think it's pretty safe to say we know that Eric Hosmer can take that step and become a superstar, but he's most likely not going to be worse than he was last year, and he had a pretty good season last year, you know, pretty decent season, I should say. So, and I think that's pretty much where we're at with all the players, you know, with the exception of like Lorenzo Cain. You know, he's probably not going to be what he was last year, but at the same time, you know, he was just kind of, the team just kind of lucked out that he had that year last year. It wasn't necessarily, no one's ever been like, man, Lorenzo Cain is the centerpiece of this lineup. And maybe they will be 2 years from now if he can keep doing it. But so there's still room to improve, but I think that floor is where you're pretty assured of what you're going to get from that floor from this team. You know, Mike Moustakas is going to bat 150. We know that.
We just know this.
Yeah.
This
so I mean,
just math.
I mean, am I alone in this? Do you get that same kind of feeling from this team?
I get it. I get what you're saying. It's, you know, there a lot of these guys, you know, Hosmer and Moustakas, and they've both been around since the middle of 2011. So we've seen them with, you know, three full seasons now, and a little bit more. Same with Perez, where he's had, you know, other than 2012, where he missed the first half because of his knee. You know, he's had a couple of full seasons. Infante's a veteran. Gordon's a veteran. Kane, you know, is probably the least tested, I guess, just because, you know, he's only kind of been a full-time guy since 2012, and he's had his injury things. You know, Rios is a veteran. Morales is a veteran. Escobar's been around a while. You know, so we've seen these guys enough to kind of have an idea of what range they're going to be in. So I think, yeah, when you're looking at the season, you're kind of like, well, I mean, there's probably not a big breakout coming from any one of these people. There's probably not a huge collapse in most cases either. So you're kind of sitting in that comfortable range of, you know, just there's not really any really bad players. There's just not a whole lot of really, really good players or great players in the lineup. At least now defensively, that's different. I mean, they've got, you know, three Gold Glovers, and the outfield is going to probably be pretty darn good, just like last year and the year before. So, you know, that from an all around perspective is good. But when you're talking about just the offense and the lineup, yeah, I mean, you kind of know what Perez is going to do. You know what Hosmer is probably going to do. You know, and I guess compared to the past, you can kind of see how, you know, maybe some of those guys might break out into something, but you kind of get an idea of where their, you know, where their baseline is. And for guys like Infante and Moustakas, it's probably not going to be, you know, they can't be a whole lot worse than they were last year. So that's something to kind of be comfortable with, I suppose. Yeah, so I get that. And plus, you know, Infante could come back and be healthy and or healthy-ish for him. And do all right, or Moustakas could, you know, figure it out. He's actually had a pretty good spring, though. We always say that. So
sounds familiar.
Yeah, we always say that. He hit a grand slam today, I guess, in the spring training game. So that's something.
That is something.
That's something. It's a thing that happened. It so yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's not really. I guess the biggest question mark is kind of like the rotation after Ventura and Duffy. Because Volquez was not a great signing and he hasn't had a good spring. His last start was all right, but you know, he hasn't thrown that great. You've got Vargas and Guthrie, neither of whom are really spectacular. They're fine for being like back end guys, and you know, Vargas, if he can repeat kind of what he did last year, he'll be all right. But you know, if both of those have some struggles, or even one of them, you kind of have some questions there. I mean, you know, the bullpen's going to be good. You know, the defense will be good. The offense is going to be what it was, most likely, with, you know, probably not much variation. So it just kind of comes down to, you know, can Ventura and Duffy bounce back and continue to, you know, produce and be as durable as they were last year? And can those last three guys, Volquez, Vargas, and Guthrie, can they maintain and be, you know, average guys? And if they are, then, you know, you get any kind of uptick from the offense, and, you know, you're in a pretty good spot. I mean, the Tigers, you know, Verlander has had some shoulder problems. Miguel Cabrera is back, and he's hitting in camp, but, you know, how's he going to do over a full season? Victor Martinez had his knee problem already. So there's a lot of, you know, red flags on the Tigers that doesn't make that, you know, they're not an obvious pick, even though they're favored in most cases. You know,
it's not the slam dunk like it's been the last like right. 2 or 3 years.
You know, Chicago will be better, but there's still questions on them. Cleveland is Cleveland. I think Cleveland's just so easy to overlook.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if you looked and polled for quote unquote experts, you could theoretically arrive at four different predictions on who would win the Central.
Yeah, I think you could. I think, you know, probably most people are going to say, you know, Detroit a lot. Cleveland's kind of the trendy pick. But their back of their rotation isn't all that great either. They've got like Zach McAllister is going to be on their opening day roster or something. And I maybe I'm thinking of the wrong guy, but just, you know, nobody who really strikes fear in you. No. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the Royals would have a shot. But yeah, there are question marks. And there's not a whole lot of room for growth. I mean, the bullpen is going to be really, at least the back end guys, it's going to be really difficult for them to have a better year than they did last year because they were so good.
Yeah.
So they'll have to come back a little bit, but I think the balance of the bullpen should probably be better. They have a lot more depth than they had last year. You know, I don't think you're going to be seeing a lot of Michael Marriott. I don't think you're going to see a lot of Casey Coleman. So guys like that, you don't really need to worry about. You got guys like Luke Kochaver who can come in. You got Chris Medlin, you know, towards the middle of the year who can probably come in and be in the bullpen, and Frazier and Flynn and Morales and some of these guys who you feel pretty good about. So, you know, I think top to bottom in the bullpen, they're probably going to be a little better as a group. The back end, you know, I mean, I don't think you can probably get two seasons in a row of Wade Davis and Kelvin Herrera going a full season without giving up a homer. I don't think you can do that twice.
Right.
If they can, awesome.
Yeah. But if they give up one or two, that still puts them at one of the best, you know, best relievers in the league.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I mean, there's no problem with that. So,
yeah. And I think to your point, some of the slack that will be given with just, you know, Holland, Herrera, Davis just not being able to perform at an obscenely high level for two seasons in a row.
Right.
I think some of that slack will be picked up by, as you mentioned, the back half of the bullpen being being up a little bit higher. So I think it might all even out, and they'll be about the, you know, might be about the same in terms of like overall ERA and things like that. But you know, I don't know that you'll end up with, like you said, Herrera and Davis two seasons in a row might be a little bit of a stretch. And, you know, Greg Holland, I mean, the shelf life for closers is just so small. I mean, he's demonstrated now a few years in a row playing at such a high level.
Mm-hmm.
You hate to have that nagging feeling, but it's always there. And it's not a Royals thing. It's this baseball.
It's a closer
thing. Pitching, you know, it's just that's how it goes. And, you know, hopefully they can keep it together. You know, the Royals they're right in the middle of their kind of window now. So you just got to hope for the next couple years they can keep this stuff rolling until they get to the point where, you know, if they have to get rid of these players or they're no longer effective, then they've got somebody ready to come up and take their place. but along with going with the end of spring training, we're going to go into what I teased at the beginning of the show, or some bold predictions. I feel like we need music.
We need fanfare.
Semi bold. A little applause animation or something. Because we've got very, very semi bold predictions.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and start with this one.
Okay.
Mike, I got one.
Well,
I
year you said that Kyle Zimmer was going to throw like 25 innings.
Yeah.
Sure he got 25 pitches.
I don't think that he'll do 25 innings this year. You can call that semi-bold if you want. But that was a freebie. Yeah, that's not even quarter bold.
Yeah.
My first semi-bold prediction is the Royals will eclipse 2 million fans at the ballpark this year.
2 million fans, jotting that down.
What?
I'm writing that down.
Oh, you're writing all this down so we can be held accountable.
Right.
I gotcha. Okay. Right. Are you with me? What are your thoughts? Is that actually bold, or is it just semi-bold?
No, I think that's possible.
Because they were at, what, 1.91 last year? I'm going to pull these up.
Yeah,
I looked
I'm
at
not
it today.
Sure
I can't remember
were.
The exact figures. So we'll pull it up.
But, I mean, you did see the excitement last year in the playoffs, and you know, everybody in town was really into it, especially in the last month. It seemed like there was a lot of A lot of different watch parties and things like that. Oh, yeah, that's an easy one. Last year, 1.956 million in attendance, advice. According to Baseball Reference. So that's not that bold.
Yeah.
That's like,
so, I mean, another
3 more 50, sellouts 000. A year.
Yeah.
You're kind of there. But still, you know, they still have to
it
do has, that.
They haven't done it since, what is it, 89 or something? I don't know when the last time they had 2.
It's 10. Been a while, yeah. In 2003, they might have been close, but I'm not gonna look.
Well, I know last year was the most they'd had since 1993, but I wasn't sure if 93 that was the year if they had over 2 million or if they were still just under at that point.
I bet they probably went over 2 million in 93. Because
that was that George Brett's last year?
That was his last year. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And they were a pretty good team that year too. So
they were.
They David Cohn start that year and Kevin Apier was around.
He won Cy Young that year, didn't he?
Cohn won it in 94.
94.
Yeah, that was – he signed the free agent deal to return in 93, won the Cy Young in 94, and was traded about this time in 95. Actually, like a week from now, maybe a week or two in 95, which, great.
Yes.
Good for them. Same with Brian McCray. That's a whole thing that I want to look that up and like
Brian McCray.
Research that stuff a little more because that 95 fire sale was just kind of like, oh, well, that sucks.
Really? I mean, you could almost trace it back to there, the beginning of the end, if you will.
Mm-hmm. You really could. So I'm going to write that down too. So
that's a show right there, Mike.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I've been meaning to look that kind of stuff up and revisit it for like 2 months now. Just haven't. 2 million. I think they can do that. The one thing would be is if they do tank and they aren't as good as anybody thinks, or if they are exactly as good as some of the projections think, then, you know, by July, you know, some of those guys, you know, some of those fans may not be showing up. If they're still good, if they're, you know, an 85 or better win team, yeah, they're gonna beat 2 million easy because this month of April, they're probably going to have their best attended April in years since probably 89, 90, 90, you know, since those early 90s years,
right.
When, you know, Brett and
they were
Gordon,
still
even Saberhagen were, you know, all still around. Gubazaw
still running on fumes of the championship there.
Right.
And
yeah,
in 93, it was 1.934 million. So they eclipsed it by about 20 some odd thousand. We're going to just keep going here until we find the last time they had 2 million. Let's see.
Probably
92 was 1.891, 2.16 million.
Wow.
They finished 82 and 80.
Your Bo was on the team too.
John Wathen, Bob Schaefer, and Hal McCray, all credited as manager that year.
You can tell how well that year went.
Yes. They finished 82 and 80. But yeah. Sixth in the AL West, so that was back when they probably only had two divisions still at that time.
Yep.
But Bob Schaefer may be the lone undefeated Royals manager in history. I don't even know.
One game?
1-0.
I wonder what John Mizrock did. He did like 2 or 3 games as Royals manager.
Series sweep, and he's one of the most successful managers in history.
Hmm.
You never know. But, Kurt Stillwell.
Kurt Stillwell. Yeah.
Heard that name in a while. Just checking out the old roster here. Todd Benzinger, Terry Shumpert.
Yeah, I
totally forgot about
this kid. Apparently is a big prospect, like probably going to be a first round draftee.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
Didn't know that. Makes me feel old. But
Brent Maine, Bill Pakoda, no relation.
Bill Pakoda.
I wonder what his Pakoda projections were. Actually, was second on the team in slugging percentage behind
Bill Pakoda?
Yeah. Or not, and OPS, sorry. 448 plate appearances.
Really?
Yeah. 756 OPS for Bill Pakoda.
And that was second best on the team?
Yeah, behind Danny Tartable. Had 990. Good lord.
Danny Tarvel.
31 home runs, 100 RBIs, 316, 397 on base percentage. Good God, Danny Tarvel.
Yeah.
You forget how good he was.
He's one of the best slugging Royals ever. He's the only Royal with more than 130 home run season as a Royal.
Good Lord. 35 doubles that year, too?
Yeah.
Only played 132 games, mind you.
Yeah.
Man, Good Lord.
Yeah, and then he went to the Yankees.
Yes, he did. People still make it feel like the Yankees stole him from us. He was traded, wasn't he?
I think he signed with them as a free agent.
Did he?
He was traded to the Royals in 87 from the Mariners for nobody. Like,
maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Total steal. I don't know why the Mariners traded him when he was 23 years old or something. Clearly going to be a good hitter, and then they traded him. I don't know. I guess prospects had much different value in that time.
So look at this. Look at the symmetry, though. Brent Maynes started 85 games at catcher that year, and Mike McFarland started 84 games. Mike McFarland, though, an 836 OPS in 1991. That's pretty good.
He had a couple of seasons where he would lead the team in home runs with 16.
Yeah, he had 13 this year.
Anyway.
Kevin Seitzer,
91. I'm just thinking of baseball cards now. I'm thinking
700 OPS. Warren Cromartie, I never heard of this guy. I don't even know.
He used to be on the Expos, too. Mm-hmm.
Gary Thurman. Oh, Gary Thurman.
Gary Thurman. Yeah, that reminds me of the who's your favorite bad Royal bracket. We never really brought that up, and it's kind of already died away. But that first weekend in the NCAA playoffs, someone on Twitter made a bracket of pick your favorite crappy Royal.
Genius. I mean, we go through this at least 2 to 3 times a season on Twitter.
Just naming random Royals and stuff. And
I'm
bringing
next time that rolls around on the old tweet machine, I'm popping Bill Pecota on that one.
Yeah, he was in it.
Let's look at Bill Pecota's career. Let's see. He had an illustrious 9 years in the MLB.
Pretty solid for
not bad. 676 career OPS. You know, he had his two best years were as a Royal. So you got that. You know,
when they traded him, they traded high on him.
Yeah, they did because
just had to include Brett Saberhagen.
He hit.
That's all.
He hit 719 OPS in 1990 and a 756 in 91, like we were just talking about. And then they traded him.
Yeah.
So, God, what did the Royals even get for that? They traded.
It was Brett Saberhagen and Bill Pecota for Greg Jeffries, Keith Miller, and Kevin McReynolds. I remember that night still. It was my first dose of Royals pain.
I was still a little young at that point.
So
wasn't really old enough to be able to appreciate it.
Oh man, it was tough. I'd have been 11 because it was that winter, December of 91, and I had gone upstairs. My bedroom was in the basement at that time, back in good old Hayes, America. I went up the stairs to get, I don't know, probably ice cream or popped. I don't know. Who knows? Doesn't matter. So I come back downstairs to my room. The TV's on. It's on the news. And they're talking about this report of Brett Saberhagen being traded. And I just kind of stood there dumbfounded for 10 minutes. Just how could they do that? I felt betrayed. It was terrible. I was okay.
Yeah, my first sports memory of that kind was a little bit the opposite, because it wasn't the Royals, it was the Chiefs, and it wasn't about them losing a player, but gaining one.
Oh, it was getting Montana?
Yes, he was my favorite player, ever. I had a Joe Montana, you know how big of a Chiefs fan I am. My whole family is just as big, if not bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Joe Montana 49ers jersey. That's how big of a fan I was of Joe Montana at the time. I had his little starting lineup action figure. And I think I've distorted this memory in my head, but in my head I was playing with with the Joe Montana starting lineup figure when my parents came and told me that the Chiefs just traded for Joe Montana. I was so excited.
What?
And then my dad had a friend who worked for the Chiefs. And so the first year we bought a bunch of football cards and got one with Joe Montana. And so my dad's friend was like, yeah, you know, just give it to me and I'll give it to this lady and she'll get Joe to sign it. So he did it, signed it, got it back to me. I was so ecstatic. We bought one of those super thick card card protector things,
like with,
you know,
the screws, like the, in the corners.
Yeah, like the 1-inch glass or
ratchet
whatever.
It down.
Yeah, got one of those bad boys. That remember wild cards? Remember those?
Wild cards?
Yeah, look it up. Let's look this up right now.
Wild cards?
I think it was like its own brand. I don't even think it was like Topps or something.
Huh.
Wild card trading cards. Yeah. Look it up. There it is. They had like weird, really like colorful borders. They were black and then they all had like a bunch of numbers.
That was the 90s. So.
Right. But they all had a bunch of numbers on them. And then like...
Yeah, I remember these.
You could get the special ones and in the bottom corner it would have like a foil embossed number, like 50 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you'd take it and you'd send it into Wild Card and they'd take your special card and they'd give you 50 of the regular cards of that particular card. So it was like, what a deal. But
yeah, I get 50 of this card. It's going to be worth it.
Nobody
cent.
Ever did that. At least not that I know of.
Yeah.
So I had one that was Joe Montana, but it was like 25 or something was the wild card number. And I obviously didn't turn it in, but I got it signed and yeah. So that was one of the first of my memories of that nature. My first true sports heartbreak, if we'll allow ourselves to indulge in this offshoot topic right here.
Why not? Bring the pain.
Yes. My first true sports heartbreak is, we're sticking with the Chiefs here. 1995.
Oh,
jeez.
Oh.
Glenn Elliott. That's all you need to say on that one. That was still, to this day, I think, probably the best Chiefs team of our lifetime, because they were bad in the 80s, and it wasn't until Schottenheimer came, they actually became good, and that was the best team that he had, best defense in the league, an offense that was, you know, passable, even though Steve Bono was your quarterback, and Glenn Elliott, and it was like the first, was that the first year after they traded away Nick Lowry or let him go in free agency? I can't remember. No, that was before free agency, so.
It was...
No, maybe it wasn't. Maybe they let. I can't remember when.
No,
Nick
free
Lowry
agency
left,
was 93.
It was 93 or 94 for the NFL. So I didn't.
So Lowry,
I couldn't remember
then
how long
might have been gone.
Yeah, so they might have traded him away, but
2 years before or something, maybe,
or maybe just cut him. You know, who knows? But regardless, I just remember. Remember going to school the next day, and my teacher had to stop class. First grade, I think. Was it first grade? Let's see. I would have been 9 years old. Yeah. So, wait, is that right? No. Third grade? Hell, I don't remember. and she's like, don't everyone go blaming this on Glenn Elliott. Football is a team sport. You guys need to learn that it's not ever just one player's fault. You know? So that was
where
we
are 20 years later.
All you need to say is one. Is, I mean, Lynn, if I just Elliott. Went, I will just do a social experiment here. If I just type in Glenn Elliott right now in Twitter and see what happens. All right, let's see what happens. I'll keep you posted. I'm gonna pull up TweetDeck here. We're gonna just, this will be a fun little experiment.
Social experiment. Glenn Elliott.
Glenn Elliott, and then see how many. I bet I get just a why question mark will be like the first response.
I'm going to try it too. while we're waiting on responses, I'll get to my bold.
Yes, give,
semi-bold
lay it on, lay it on.
Prediction.
After that gigantic tangent, give your first semi-bold prediction.
Yeah. Mine is, I would say by the end of the year, Christian Colon will be your starting second baseman. I think
the year Christian Colon.
Yeah,
I think
with Infante's injury problems over the year, you know, he's still dealing with the same elbow that was a problem last year. He had shoulder problems last year. He had back problem that put him on the DL. He had, you know, the bruised jaw, which, okay, you can't blame him for that because that's flukish, but still happened. I think all that together, plus the fact that Colon is playing pretty well. He played pretty well last year, and Infante did not play well. I think by the end of the year, they're going to be at a point where they're going to find those guys as interchangeable. Infante can play some third. I don't know if his arm's going to be able to hold up over there, but you know, if they needed to switch their roles, I think they'd be comfortable doing it, especially if they feel like they need to win now and get the, you know, the right mix of guys out there so that, you know, you've got a team that can win now on the field. That means you can't have some guy who's hitting 240, getting on base 28% of the time with no slugging. So if Colon's hitting well and getting on base, he's walked a good amount this spring. Yeah, I don't think they would hesitate to make that change. So I think either by performance or injury or both, yeah, I think there's a good chance that Christian Colon will be your guy at that stage.
Christian Colon. I'm actually not against this. We've talked about this before. I was rather pleased with what I saw from Christian Colon last year. If you're a month into the season even, and you're getting from Omar Infante what you got from him last year, you know, I mean, unless the Royals are just cruising, you know, and if they're month into the season and they're 20-10, you know, and then, you know, then you can be like, okay, let's see if he can work through this. But if they're like, you know, 13-12 or something like that, and Infante's giving you what he gave you last year, like, you just can't, you know, the Royals are now in a position where they can make that change and try and pull that trigger and see if they can get something else out of that position with Christian Colon, and I wouldn't be opposed to it. So that's an interesting prediction. I like it. I like where your head's at.
Yep. The one hiccup that might be in there is that Colon is pretty much the backup shortstop. So if there's any kind of injury to Escobar, well, I guess that would put him in position there, but you know, they might hesitate a little longer just because they're probably not going to be comfortable with Infante as the backup short, or, you know, shortstop if he ended up being a utility guy. But I think if your starters are in place, I think that he's got a good chance to take that job. And really, the Royals didn't use a lot of substitutions last year anyway, so I don't think it's like a worry that they're going to be switching guys out. They're not like the A's where they had, you know, 500 different lineups.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I think is, I think he's got a good shot. I mean, he's hitting well. He's always been that guy who profiles as, you know, a pro guy who can do the job. Not going to be spectacular, but if he's an average second baseman and gives you average defense, that's going to have some value. And he's making no money, so.
Yeah, and it was what they always said, high floor, low ceiling. You know, you which is another way of saying just what you said, but you know, he's going to give you enough, but not going to give you too much, if that makes sense. But so yeah, I would it'll definitely be interesting to see what happens, because if you're Christian Colon, then you're primed to gun for that spot, because there's a chance, it's a good chance it's going to be open in there for the taking. So, you know, we'll see what happens. So that'll be a good one to keep an eye on. my second bold prediction, since I was so spot on with my Kyle Zimmer take last year.
You nailed it.
I'm gonna heat up those leftovers once again, and I am gonna say that Sean Manaea will pitch at least 25 innings in the major leagues.
Okay,
there it is. It's out there.
Sean Manaea. Double Manaea. Down.
Double down. Yes, I should have said 50 innings. Should have truly doubled down. Be like, okay, well,
that'd be really ambitious.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's in a position where, I mean, he showed, there were times last year where you'd hear scouts and whatnot, and it was like, oh man, you can totally see why people thought that Sean Manaea might be the number one overall pick before he had his injury issues. And then there were times where you were like, you know, maybe he is not as ready as we thought. But Let's see. I'm trying to pull up his stats here, but Baseball Reference is not cooperating. Am I not spelling his name right? Sean Manaea?
M-A-N-A-E-A.
A-E-A.
Is that extra A?
Yep, that's there it
is. Took
me
a month to get that figured out.
His Twitter name is apparently Babies M Giraffe. I didn't even know that. I don't even follow him on Twitter. Maybe I should change that.
Giraffe.
But yeah, in the high A, right? He, let's see, 3.11 ERA and 25 starts, 121 innings pitched. That's a good, load for 25 for 20. I'm sorry, I'm a sixth grader. for 25 games, 121 innings. That's not bad.
Yeah.
1.28 WHIP. So let's see, what was strikeouts per nine here? Strikeouts per nine.
Better towards the end of the year.
Yeah, but point being, I think he was working towards the spot that the Royals are feeling. And he's starting in Double A.
Yeah, he should be on the Double A along with Finnegan, Christian Benford, and
Almonte.
Yeah, which is that's a fun rotation.
Yeah.
That echoes kind of like the John Lamb, Danny Duffy, Mike Montgomery, Chris Dwyer.
Or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That year.
That year, yes.
We dreamed of things, and now Danny Duffy's about it.
Yeah, but so that's what they always say. You know, you got to have
five
pitchers
one.
To get one, right? So there it is, you know. But yeah, I think they're going to start. I think if the Royals had their druthers about them, they might start him in AAA, but I think they really just don't want to rush him, so they're starting him in AA. But since he's a college guy, since he's shown some good things, I think if they're in a scenario where he's just blowing people away for like that first month, I think they'll move him up really quick, because the sooner they get him to AAA, the sooner he's ready to come into the major leagues. And I think by at the latest – early June, I bet he's in AAA, unless he just implodes, which is certainly possible.
Yep.
And after a month or two of doing well in AAA, I think they'll pull him up and give him some spot time. So there it is. Semi-bold, it's out there.
I can see it. I mean, the way that he is and the way they've approached some of those guys, you know, you saw with Zimmer, they were ready. Like a couple years ago when he had like four great starts in Wilmington, and they were ready. They were like, okay, we saw what we needed to see. You made the adjustment that we needed to see, and they bumped him up. They didn't, you know, hesitate to see, can he keep doing this for another three or four starts? They were like, you're going to Double A, and he still had a good time then. And then, you know, ran into the injuries that he's been kind of battling since. But Finnegan, you know, when they got him in, they knew right away they wanted to push him quickly. And I think it could be the same with Manaea, in that they, you know, if he gives them any kind of sign in Double A, four or five starts where he's really good and dominating and doing what he needs to do, yeah, I don't see why they wouldn't bump him up. I mean, he's a kid who came out of college, and college guys can move faster a lot of times. One, they're older. Two, they've had some kind of conditioning programs that are a little more advanced. You know, he's obviously the talent is there. I mean, before he had some of his shoulder and hip problems, he could have been a number one overall pick. And so I think he's got a shot. If he starts showing flashes right away, they could just put him on the same kind of Finnegan plan, you know, have him start, see what he does. And then if it works out, they might bring him up and put him in the bullpen and have him be kind of a long relief situational guy. And yeah, they might get to that 25. It's all going to depend his April, May, and probably June. Yeah, that's probably going to be what you're looking for, is if he can hold it down during those months. So I could see that. I can see him pitching zero as well, but that's just how it is with pitching prospects. You know, and if everybody's pitching well at the big league level, they may not have much reason to rush him up anyway. So who knows?
Who knows? All right.
Who knows?
Semi-bold prediction number two, Mike. Lay it on me. What
do you got? I don't know. This team is weird. I'm going to say that, this one will probably burn. But I guess I'll say Mike Moustakas will surpass 100 OPS plus this year.
What?
Just yeah, I know. That's super bold. He's going to be about average. You know, his career year by year, 86 OPS plus his rookie year, 91 the year after. That was the year he hit 20 homers, 34 doubles. 2 years ago was a 77 OPS plus. Last year when he was sent down to the minors was a 74 OPS plus. I think he can do better than that. I think I'm going to hesitantly buy his spring training adjustments. He's going the other way. He's not trying to pull everything. It's definitely an effort when in the past it doesn't seem like he's put in any effort. You know, he's made comments about, well, he's not really one to look at video and he doesn't seem to, you know, do scouting and anything like that. And so you saw last year he just pounded everything to second base all year long. If he's taken those adjustments to heart, yeah, I think he might have a shot at being an average contributor. And if he has any kind of good defense at third base, that's going to be a pretty valuable guy.
That's truly semi-bold, Mr. Engel. All right,
let's see.
I think I got one more in me here. I've been mulling this over because you're right. It is kind of a tough team to get to. To get too semi-bold.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to reach into my treasure trove of semi-bold predictions, man, it's a tough one. Because I've got, there's plenty of just kind of little ones. But Here we go. You ready? You ready for this?
I am ready.
All right. Semi-bold. I think Lorenzo Cain's going to hit over 300 again.
Okay.
I think, because I think he's a couple years before his time that he's had before last year. It was always kind of he started off strong, and then people kind of got used to him and, you know, had kind of seen him around, and then he kind of tailed off and he would kind of go in streaks. And I think just naturally he's kind of a streaky hitter and whatnot. But I think last year he kind of figured something out. I do think he had a lot of batted ball luck, but and his on base percentage isn't where I like it, but I think he's one of those guys. I think he's good at making contact, kind of like a Sal Perez type. So I think he can pull it off again. 300. Lorenzo Cain.
All right. We'll drop that down too. I think he could do that. I think there's going to be some, I mean, you know, with BABIP, it's always weird because, you know, with him, he had like a 380 last year, which is a lot, but he's also a fast guy. And if you're a fast guy and you hit it on the ground to the left enough, you're going to have opportunities to leg out base hits. But he also, you know, he had that little flair to right that he would do all the time that, you know, found a way to drop in. He had enough line drives to get things going. I think he could hit for more power. I think he's going to hit, let's say, 15 home runs. That'll be my semi-bold.
15 prediction. Home runs.
Yep. These are the bold predictions. That's what a weird team it is because 25 innings pitched by a rookie. I guess that's more bold than mine. But, yeah, I guess mine aren't very bold at all. That guy's going to hit 15 homers? Oh, my God.
That's
madness.
When you're a Royals fan, 15, yeah, this is insane. These predictions are so bold. Oh, my God.
Third on your team, though. So
yeah, I mean, that's when 20 home runs leads the team multiple years. That's
grading on a curve.
Absolutely. In 2013, did they even have somebody that hit 20 home runs?
2013?
Yeah.
I feel like they did. I think Gordon might have had 21, I think.
Did he?
Yeah, well, I don't have those numbers in front of me. You got me on the spot.
Here. We are going to pop this up here because it's our show and we can do whatever the hell we want.
Yep.
All right, Gordon.
Still waiting on the bribes.
Gordon, 2013, had exactly 20 home runs.
All right.
So let's see. Whew! Thought we might have had a year in there. Maybe 2012 was the year I was thinking of. I swear there was a year.
2011, there were a bunch of guys had 20.
Yeah, that was when.
It was the Melky, Frank
Gordon,
Gordon. Yep. Hosmer had 19.
Yeah, no, 2012 was the year Butler blew up. He had 29 that year, so he did. So,
yeah.
But in 2013, Gordon led with 20, but he was the only one at 20. The next closest was Butler with his 15. Or no, sorry, Hosmer had 17. Didn't see that first.
Much better than 15.
Much, but it's way closer to 20 than 15.
So much better.
So much better. but yeah, that's the world we're living in here. With
yeah.
The,
they're just not
the Royals.
A
it's
home
just
run
kind of the
team.
Way it is, you know. It's Kauffman. It's just such a hard park to hit. It's just so it's too hard.
It is, and they've you know they just don't draft those guys. They just don't. Or with guys like Moustakas and Hosmer, they just haven't developed to be those guys. Moustakas doesn't make the right contacts. And
right.
Hosmer's
And we've talked about this before. The emphasis that the Royals organization places on contact is not conducive to home run hitters flourishing in this organization.
Yeah.
So
which
I mean,
if they're tailoring that to the ballpark, I guess that's okay. But I think you know they could still probably eke out a few more homers from some of these guys if they let them unleash a little more. They lose some batting average, but
yeah,
you know, and, you gain some slugging, and I think that's normally a trade off right now that teams will take.
But I think you know if. And we've talked about this kind of reverse money ball the Royals have unintentionally fostered here. And I think if you kind of look at it, that's almost where, again, I don't want to give them too much credit.
Right.
But, you know,
easily fluked into some of it.
Yeah. And you don't want to plan a 162 game season around what could happen in, you know, theoretically at most 20 games in the postseason. It's 20 games, right? If you went 7 in the CS, 7 in the World Series. And
yeah.
5. So 19 games, not 20, 19. So, you know, you don't want to base 162-game season around what you could do in those 19. I guess 20 if you counted the wild card. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, it's 3 weeks.
Right. Games, but so. At the same time, you know, you look at both the Royals and the Giants last year, two organizations that highly emphasize contact. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it on the playoff run. I mean, when you make that much contact, the pure randomness of baseball over the course of a season, you know, it evens out to the point where, you know, you kind of are what you're supposed to be. But over the course of 3-4 weeks, it doesn't. And mm-hmm. sometimes you get really hot and things start falling. And that's what happened with the Royals. You know, the Royals could do everything exactly the same and then this year lose in the wild card game. I mean, if that ball Sal Perez hits in the bottom of the 11th inning is 2 feet to the left, you know, then who knows what happens? It goes foul. Yeah. And you know, maybe he strikes out on
Hosmer's triple, or
yeah, you know, maybe Perez strikes out on the next pitch. Maybe he pops up to foul territory like he did to end the World Series. You know, who knows? So that's kind of the risk you take, but it also sets you up for success, maybe a little bit more than if you took the true money ball approach. I mean. And of course, there's always, you know, it's not ever black and white. There's always that fine line because you've got, when you've got a team like the A's and you take that, you know, quote, money ball approach, mm-hmm. then when you have a team with decent talent like the A's have had, but you can kind of game the system to win, you know, play above your heads, if you will.
Yeah. You maximize the talent that you do have.
That playoff and the playoffs, it catches up to you because you can't. You know, you're not able to maximize everything for one game. You're able to maximize it over the course of a 162 game season.
Yep. But shit doesn't work in the playoffs.
Right. And it's where a team like the Red Sox, who have adapted the same approach, but have much more talented players because they have more money to spend, you know, that's the ultimate marriage of the two. you know, Moneyball with money.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can go buy someone like David Ortiz, who understands the value of getting on base and can hit and has a solid plate approach. So you don't have to go and find these guys that have these one definable skill. So another offshoot, another tangent, but
it's what we do.
Contact Royals. All right, should we give one more? We've given three bold predictions apiece here.
I'm out. I threw this question out to Twitter last week just to kind of see what some responses would be. Some were snarky, go figure.
Right.
But some of them, one guy, Rick Gehring, Gehring, said that they will regret letting Carlos Peguero go. I'm not sold on that idea at all. Joshua K. Ward said Yordano Ventura will have the highest WAR among Royals pitchers and will make the All-Star game. That's not super bold, but that's okay. Iowa Royal says they will not finish dead last in walks or home runs, but I'm not saying which one.
Interesting.
Brian McGannon predicts that Alex Rios will turn into a big pile of dust after getting beat. So,
well, not outside the realms of possibility.
Right.
If I will give one more, I'll go ahead and throw one more out there. If you're ready, Mike, prepare yourself. Bold. This isn't even semi. This is legit bold.
This is crazy.
Lynn Elliott will not sink the Royals in the playoffs this year. There it is. It's bold. I told you it was bold.
That is way out there.
It's out there. So,
Lynn Elliott. I'll write that down too. Just in case. Because who knows? It could happen.
Yes.
I only got one response on Twitter when I tweeted Lynn Elliott.
That's better than I got, because I got nothing.
Oh, everybody must be out or something. I got it.
Out or taking the night off. Everybody's waiting to gear up for next week, because it's going to be a Twitter firestorm of Royals craziness.
I think so. The only one I got was from the fake Ned, who retweeted me and said, unfollow, report for spam, delete, close your Twitter account.
There it is.
So
that's fake Ned for you.
Yeah, but I think that's probably accurate. In this case, he probably speaks for everybody else.
Most likely.
Yeah. It's the one time.
One time he got something right.
Damn. No other time.
No other time. I think we'll wrap it up and make this a short show for us.
Short, yeah. Still an hour.
Right at about an hour. We'll do that. And next week we'll have plenty to talk about. Plenty to talk about. The Royals season will have started. The defending American League champions, which we get to say until they are
dethroned. All year.
Until they are dethroned, we get to say it. So defending American League champions. And I'm making it my goal this week and this weekend to catch up on The Walking Dead. So,
oh, yeah.
I think you've probably seen it all. You watched last night?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I enjoyed it. It was interesting.
I'm thinking, I'm like four episodes behind. I've been slacking, been playing too many video games instead of watching TV. So,
yeah.
I'm gonna make that happen though, and then we're gonna talk about this next week, because I'm sure there's some things to talk about. Of course, most important thing will be the Royals. with that, we'll wrap this up. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for listening. For Michael Engel, I'm your host, Jeff Herr. Thanks again for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
Hey folks, here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a low-down, hoochie-coocher. She was the roughest, toughest frail. Minnie had a heart as big as a whale. Heidi, 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 ho!
Heidi, 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 ho!
Yeah.
been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.